Today is March 18th, 2015, and this is episode number 298 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man without a title. Get the full story on anything we cover in this show. You can visit macobserver.com/ACM, and if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com. We just want to hear from you.
We do. We love hearing from you. Also, We're kind of lonely.
Yes. In a sad, awful kind of way.
Yeah.
Speaking of sad and awful, by the way, we have gotten some mail in the last couple of weeks that I thought we should mention.
That's quite a setup for the mail. Just saying.
Well, I've got to make up for the fact that I had no title ready to go.
All right. Well, mailroom apprentice.
Faulkner. There we go. Mailroom apprentice today. Faulkner White wrote us. Brian, you have to stop pronouncing Tesla as Tesla. It's pronounced Tesla. Please stop getting it wrong. It's driving me crazy. Thanks in advance. All right, I got to look this up right now. I actually have a thing. Here's the thing. I actually have this thing about pronouncing names correctly and words, foreign language words. I want to pronounce them correctly. I'm not saying that I always do, but I want to.
You know, it's kind of funny that I had not noticed how you're pronouncing Tesla.
You say Tesla, then.
Oh, yeah.
You say Tesla.
Tesla.
Tesla, all right.
Soft S, not Z.
I've definitely always said Tesla. You know where this penchant comes from me? I think I've actually told you the story, but I don't think we've ever discussed it in front of our readers.
Well, then hold on. I'll give you a setup. No, Brian, you haven't told me. Please do.
It's Peter Jennings. Peter Jennings, when he took over at ABC back in the 70s.
Not the 70s, the 70s.
Correct. He always pronounced foreign names, of course he's Canadian, but non-American / non-Canadian names, he always pronounced them correctly. If he was saying a word in another language or borrowed from another language, he pronounced it correctly. If he was saying somebody's name, foreign leaders at the time, he would always pronounce them correctly. And I was always very impressed with that because even in broadcast journalism, let alone ordinary folks, so many folks just don't care to bother to try to learn how to say something correctly. And that's, it just really impressed me, and this made this huge impact that has resonated, you know, umpteen jillion years later. So if I've been mispronouncing Tesla, internet research seems divided. 3 weeks when my red S, or is it pronounced as, Elon pronounces it Tesla. Elon definitely says Tesla. The dictionary says
he know?
Tesla. Well, it's his company.
Yeah, whatever.
So when it comes to Tesla, the company, his pronunciation probably matters the most. When it comes to Nikola, it's definitely not. Well, let's see here. So it's kind of like a Bimmer or Beamer. For, you know, the cars.
I had no idea there was a discussion about that, or a debate.
Yeah, and I can never remember which is which. The motorcycles are Bimmer or Beamer, and the cars are Bimmer or Beamer. And it's one or the other. Like, you know, and they're the twain shall meet.
Interesting. I've said Beamer for both, and here you go. So, this is hard-hitting journalism, people.
Nikola was Czech, right?
I believe so.
Let's see here. I'm checking. Nikola Tesla. Serbian, sorry. Goodness gracious, to our Serbian listeners. He's a Serbian-American. How would the Serbs have pronounced his name? That's my question.
I'm assuming Nikola.
Well played. All right.
Thank you.
So that's our letter from Faulkner White. If I've been pronouncing it wrong, I'm going to do my best to correct it. I need to do some more research before I know whether or not Faulkner is correct or whether or not I am correct. But you have put me on notice, sir, and I appreciate that.
The great thing is someone's listening to the way you pronounce words.
I know. I like that. Yeah. I appreciate that. I and honestly, if I'm wrong, I want to fix it. That just drives me nuts. I don't like to be wrong on names. Jeremy Crawl wrote us. And
hi, Jeremy.
He says that I think he's referring to when this is episode 295, and I think I was positing that Apple knows a thing or two about software and that Apple should be able to do an interface better than anybody else. And he asks, have you used iTunes lately? I wouldn't want software that bloated trying to operate the motor and transmission in my vehicle. Fair enough. He actually said a lot more. It's a great letter. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
You make a very good point. But, for every iTunes, I will raise you iOS. And I will raise you OS 10 as a whole. OS 10 isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good.
Can you imagine if the operating system for the Apple Car was based on Safari? Mm-hmm. You start off the morning and your car takes up one lane, but by the afternoon it's 2.5 lanes.
Right. Yes, that's what that means.
Yeah,
2.5 lanes.
That's a memory
magic. And then we have one more letter, Andrew DeFranco. Wants to know, he said that the specs for USB-C for the new MacBook says it's a 29 watt charger, and that's compared to the 45 watt charger used on the MacBook Air. Actually, that's the different size MacBook Airs, I think, have different chargers, don't they?
I think the MacBook Air has one charger size, but when you go up to the 13 inch MacBook Pro, yeah, then you get the bigger charger.
Okay, well, it's a good thing we did some research on this ahead of time.
That's right. We're professionals here.
We are professionals. So he wants to know if that means it's going to take the MacBook forever to charge, 29-watt number limited by the USB standard, or is that a limitation of the Mac? It is most likely limited by the standard itself. It would take longer to charge the same amount of battery, but here's the deal. There is no way the new MacBook has the same amount of battery as the MacBook Air.
Yeah, I'm assuming that even though this is lower wattage charger, you're not going to see noticeably longer charge times.
Correct. And it could end up being a little bit faster. I mean, Apple is doing amazing things in the battery space for its mobile devices. And it's doing that amazing stuff on both the power consumption side and on the hardware power consumption side, the operating system power consumption side, and then also in the way it uses space. And like one of the things they showed us with the MacBook was that it's all they're using battery cells that are of different size.
Yeah, so they can stair step them together, in essence.
Right. And those are good things. Those are good things. But no, I don't think, I don't know yet because I don't have a MacBook and I haven't charged one. But my strong gut feeling on this is that it's not going to take noticeably longer for the darn thing to charge.
I will be very surprised if it takes longer. And I will not be surprised at all if it charges faster than a MacBook Pro.
Right. Just simply because it has so much less battery.
And look at how quickly you can charge an iPad. And that uses a 12 watt charger? Is that right?
Right.
Yeah. And yes, I know in some ways that's not a fair comparison, but the point is that I think you won't see a longer charge time on the new MacBook.
Yeah. And he also wants to, this is a great question. Do you think there is room for Apple to sell the MacBook and the Air as separate lines for more than a year or two?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Because they are currently targeting different user markets, I believe. The MacBook I see as the device for someone that that wants to have a more powerful iPad, but they aren't really that concerned about the horsepower and overall flexibility that you get with a full-on laptop. So I see this as the iPad Pro that's been rumored. It just happens to run OS 10. So I think there's a different market, and that we'll see a distinct difference between MacBook and MacBook Air for a while. Over time, that's going to change because the technology will be changing anyhow. And I'm thinking eventually having distinct product lines like that won't be important anymore. And then they'll go back to having the ultralight laptop and the heavier duty pro laptop.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. And I mostly agree. I mean, it's, I do think that it's possible that the MacBook could eventually subsume the MacBook Air line. It's possible, but I don't think it will. I think if anything, that the MacBook Air is going to be Apple's budget, you know, its entry level laptop. It's not budget, but entry level laptop. And that it's going to stay that way.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
If the MacBook had been introduced with a non-Retina display, I would have said that, you know, the MacBook Air wasn't long for this world. But it coming out with a Retina display says that Apple doesn't intend to bring the Retina display to the Air.
At least not for a while.
Probably not even, and maybe not ever. I don't know. Maybe not ever. If you want a Retina display on the ultra portable, get the MacBook.
Yep, there you go.
So we have a sponsor this week. It's lynda.com. We're going to talk about them a little bit later.
That's awesome. They're pretty cool people.
Good times.
Yeah.
Some possibly less good times, though. We have Apple, supposedly, according to the New York Post, which isn't the most of reliable
news outlets.
Yeah. Looking at you, Rupert Murdoch.
And right now he's kind of freaking out, thinking, how did Brian get into my smoking lounge?
That's probably the case. That said, the Post has published reports based on sources that have actually borne out. It has happened.
Okay, so there's that. They have a mixed track record with Apple Intel.
Correct.
And by Intel, I mean intelligence, not Intel computer. Or Intel chips.
Correct. So tell us what they reported this week, because you wrote that up.
Oh, sure. Okay. So what they reported is that as part of the negotiations for the streaming television network that Apple wants to make, that they have agreed to give the content providers, so it'd be like ABC and Disney and CBS and Fox, to give them user information.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see where giving information up to the networks would make it more likely that they would sign the content deals that Apple needs to get their streaming service up and off the ground. So we haven't heard exactly what that information is going to be. And of course, we don't even have any confirmation that this is happening at all. But
right,
it does seem pretty likely.
Well,
that the service is coming.
That the service is coming, right. And the Post said specifically that ...
Oh, sorry, I thought you were continuing and I was being polite and not interrupting you.
No, I was trying to actually be polite so that you could actually tell the story.
That's so nice. Why, thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Anyhow, so okay, so the networks, they're looking to get something more out of this deal than just having their content in more places, and for Apple, this gives them a way to offer TV viewers an alternative to cable and satellite TV subscriptions. So they'll get like 25 channels out of this, and they'll be paying between $20 and $40 a month for the service. And since the networks are going to be making deals that will probably upset on some level Comcast and Time Warner and Dish, they need to get a little something extra out of this for themselves. And getting some user data would be a very valuable thing for the networks.
Well, it would be. It's one of the things that that's one of the things that we believe has always held up Apple's negotiations in this market.
Right. Apple has a history of not wanting to give up any personal information about their customers.
Right. And if Apple were to do that, I would actually see that as a betrayal of Apple's chosen role as guardian of our privacy.
Sure. Yeah, that seems like a totally reasonable reaction.
But here's the deal. The Post might have this story, even if the Post is right, it might only be half right. Apple already collects some amount of user data on us, and it uses that data to serve iAds to apps.
True. And then there are apps, say like the Netflix app, that is passing user data directly back to Netflix so that things like where you are in a show will synchronize across all your devices.
Right. But Apple still protects our information by being the absolute arbiter of that information. Apple doesn't say to an advertiser, oh, you want fat old dudes who like music and sometimes game and write about Apple for a living? Here you go. Here's Brian. Right? That's not what Apple does. Apple says,
you're not old.
Oh, just roll with me here. Okay. Apple says, okay. Oh, you want fat old dudes who like music and play games and write about Apple? All right. Don't worry about it. We got it. You know, what do you want to show him? We'll take care of it.
All right. So I can see something like that happening simply because we already have the precedent. That's what Apple does today.
That is what Apple does today. And here's the, you know, so the question is, this has been a problem with newspapers. This has been a problem with magazines. And it is how Apple is handling, I mean, in that newspapers and magazines were both wanting subscriber data because their entire business model is predicated on selling subscriber data. They sell us. You know, when you subscribe to the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times or the local Picayune Rag, that whoever owns that company is collecting data on you and selling it. Your credit card companies do the same thing. Your credit card companies know more about us historically, our credit card companies knew more about us until any company other than Google. Facebook may actually be able to top them too. And they sell that data. And they actually sell that data with names attached to it. They sell mailing lists. That's a big part of how newspapers made money. It was selling mailing lists and selling classified ads. And there was a lot of annoyance with Apple because Apple wouldn't give those companies our user data, our names, our addresses, our phone numbers.
And that's big money for these companies.
Right. Because they're, you know, they weren't able to think differently and come up with new ways to make money. And the reality is that broadcasters have long seen transmission through both cable and through the internet as a way for them to get that data too, so that they can sell it. Because they all want to sell. Everyone wants to sell us to make a profit off of us. And we feed that because we all want to get stuff without paying for it.
Yeah, that's true. There's this this very strong entitlement attitude that we have through our culture. And yeah, so people want things for free. And in many cases, they feel they are owed something for free, whether that be a TV show or a song or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. They're just entitled to it. There's a lot of people that feel that way. I am not one of them. You got to pay for stuff. Someone's got to pay for it. If it's not you, it's going to be someone else.
Right. And money has to come from somewhere.
The money has to come from somewhere. And most of the time, when we're not paying for a service or product, we are the product, right? That's become the new mantra for the modern digital age, modern internet age. So broadcasters kind of want a piece of that pie. And we've heard reports in the past that they were tense because Apple didn't want to give them access to that data. And now we have the Post saying that Apple will give them access to that data. Well, that's possible. It is possible. It's possible that Apple is going to go back on everything that it does.
It's possible, but I have a feeling that you're going to say that's not likely.
It's not likely. It's a lot more likely to me that Apple will play a role in serving ads through this content for the broadcasters. That to me makes a lot more sense.
You know, I can see that. And the fact that you brought up iAds as the precedent for that,
mm-hmm.
it makes it very easy to say, yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now the other side of that, what if Apple really is just going to start giving up all this information that previously they protected?
It's going to make it a tough sell for Tim Cook to sit there and talk about privacy as a selling point for Apple, which he has been doing more and more and more and more and more of.
That's true. I think it would be very difficult to talk about our privacy and come across as honest and genuine if our personal information is being given to other companies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, Tim Cook has made a point of saying we are not the product. And
that we have a right to privacy.
Yes. So if our personal information is being given over to the networks, then at that point we have become the product again.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
exactly.
Would suck.
So yeah, and I just don't think that's the way Apple's going to go, and not because I'm some kind of fanboy on this topic, not because I have blind faith in Apple, but because it actually doesn't make sense for Apple to go back on its word in that particular fashion. It makes a lot of sense for Apple to be an arbiter of ad information on behalf of the networks.
And they already have an infrastructure in place for that.
They have the infrastructure in place for it. They have the business philosophy for it. And they have the marketing message for it. And to do something else doesn't fly for me. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, so I like what you're saying, and I think what you're saying is very possible, or it's at least plausible. And this morning we talked about this a little bit on Daily Observations.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Hamilton's take was Apple's already been giving companies access to this information. And he offered up HBO Now, HBO Go, Netflix, Hulu as examples of this, where the companies are collecting, Apple is allowing the companies to collect the data that they need to be able to offer the service that they are selling to us.
True, but that information is being collected through the apps. It's not being collected by Apple.
Exactly.
That's the difference here. That's my quibble with Dave on this particular topic, is that Apple is allowing us to have subscriber information or to have subscriptions to services that as a byproduct of them delivering that service allows them to collect data. For instance, Netflix can't send us a show without knowing what show they're sending us. So they get to collect that data.
That's true. And they can't have our show sync across devices if they don't have that data.
Correct. Correct. So that's different than Apple becoming the collector and distributor of that information.
Yeah,
much different.
To be fair, we don't know if that's what the New York Post is saying.
True.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that Apple is going to collect and then redistribute that data. Or it could be what you suggested or proposed was that Apple collects the data and then uses their iAd service to push the appropriate ads out to viewers.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be what Dave said, which is the app is allowing for the data to transfer directly between the user and the service. And then Apple isn't involved in that process.
Right.
So, yeah, so we don't really know what's happening. But what we do know, there's a lot of people that are really freaking out because they're afraid Apple is selling them out.
Right. And that's the kind of story that the Post likes to run.
Of course.
Whether or not there's any validity. Well, I don't know. I honestly think that there's something behind that there's something behind the story.
Yeah, I agree. There's something there. We don't know exactly what it means yet because we don't have enough information. And what I'm hoping is that if this is something where a lot more data is being collected on us and shared than we're comfortable with, mm-hmm. that we have an opt-out option.
Yeah, probably won't if Apple's doing that at all, but probably won't have an op. But I mean, we don't have to subscribe.
That's true. We don't. And there's a lot of people that won't. Dave has already figured out that at least like for HBO Now, it's not worth it for him to cut his cable cord and buy that.
Right.
And my guess is that there will be a lot of people that look at their overall cable package, what they will get from Apple's subscription service, and decide that the math doesn't work for them. And so they'll keep whatever cable package they currently have.
Right.
So you don't have to buy into this, just like you don't have to buy an Apple Watch or an iPhone.
Right. Right. But, you know, but we want... You know, Apple does have that sort of, it's almost like a cult personality. I mean, not really, but,
yeah.
You know, about, it's like a corporate cult personality. And you know, we tend to believe in the message that Apple gives us.
Well, Apple has done, for the most part, a really good job of earning our trust.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So why would Apple change that now? And the answer is, I don't think Apple will change that. It just makes so much more sense. It makes so much more sense for Apple to do the things that it's been doing.
Yeah, that's true.
Duh. That's, you know, that's a technical term. You don't want to use that one at home.
No, that should be left to trained professionals like
yeah,
Brian. Like,
yeah, and well, in you.
Well, yeah, but I was using you as the example. I mean, duh.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Why do people let us do this?
Well, some people really enjoy it. Other people, it's that morbid curiosity, like when you have to slow down for a car wreck on the side of the road.
Uh-huh.
Just to see what's there.
Uh-huh.
And I understand. And either way, I'm just glad people listen.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm with you there. I'm going to support you on that.
All right. That's awesome.
I'm going to support you on that. All righty. So we had another topic, didn't we?
We did. Which, hold on, I can't find the topics. Professionals here, people. Total professionals.
The Apple Watch Store. Tokyo.
There we go. So you did much better at finding our topic list than I did.
Yeah, well, I had it right there in front of me. I probably didn't need to ask. I could have just looked.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You probably could have.
I could have. All right. So anyway, here's the deal. We have Apple building something in Isetan, Shinjuku, or Shinjuku Isetan, which is like the, you know, Japan loves its trends and it loves its trendsetters.
Uh-huh.
And this is like the department store that like where everything that's new and cool starts.
So that's exactly where Apple wants to be.
Right. That's where Apple wants to be. And they're building the store within a store. It's all, you know, it's got black walls up with, you know, white writing. And it says Apple Watch with the Apple logo and watch. So Apple Watch. And then in Japanese, it says coming soon.
Okay.
So it sounds like it's going to be an Apple Watch store. You know, so an Apple store, but not an Apple store. It's an Apple Watch store.
Which is really kind of interesting.
Yeah, super interesting.
A whole Apple store dedicated to one product line.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that if they're going to do that, this is probably one of the locations where you will be able to take a look at Apple Watch Edition.
Yes. Yes, I would think so.
Yeah, because those will be available at Apple stores and at select retailers. So if you're going to be showing off a $17,000 Apple Watch, I can see why you would want to have a dedicated mini Apple store just for that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And and that's certainly the place to do it. And we also believe that these little pop-up stores are going to be opening in at least Berlin, Paris, and London. Wouldn't surprise me if New York is one of those two.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense.
I'm not sure where in New York, but... seems like there should be one in New York.
So, yeah, it does.
Yeah, I find it interesting because this will be the first, like, you know, we haven't had an iPad store.
No, we've never had an iPad store.
You know, we haven't even had an iPhone store, not from Apple.
Nope. But this is a totally new product area for Apple.
Yeah.
So it stands to reason that if they were going to try something different, this would be where it would happen.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Apple's step into the fashion industry.
Yeah.
Which I'm finding very interesting because I have always felt that Apple's products fall into the fashion category anyhow, just because of the way they look. And with the caveat that we did have that period of time where we had beige box computers from Apple where there was simply no way to keep track of which model was which. But mm-hmm. We're beyond that now. So everything's kind of fashion feeling now. And am I like alone in my feeling that my iPhone is a fashion statement?
I doubt it.
Okay. So I'm betting that at least a few of our listeners then see their iPhone as part of their fashion statement.
Yeah.
I mean, it mattered to me what color I have. It mattered to me which cover I put on it and what color that cover is. That seems kind of like a fashion thing.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, there you go. I've just validated myself. but Apple Watch, it's the new thing. So... Apple doing just a total full-on fashion blitz for it seems like a reasonable move, even though this is very outside of their typical right. marketing and sales system.
Yeah, well, it's not very outside. I mean, you know, Apple does have – it has small stores. It has Apple stores. Apple's very good at the retail thing. But this is – you know, this is the sort of thing that I guess that Angela Arendt has been working on. Is it
Arendt or Arendt's?
I don't know.
I look forward to your letters, people.
Yeah, please. I think it's probably Arendt's, actually. Arendt's, that doesn't sound right. It's probably Arendt's.
Yeah, what Peter kind of Jennings car do you think she drives?
Would not be proud of me. I'm sorry, Mr. Jennings. I will do better to live up to your expectations, sir.
Yeah. Every time you mispronounce someone's name, Peter Jennings sheds another tear.
That's probably true. Yeah. So I look forward to seeing it. This is, as you said, this is going to be one of the places where the Apple Watch Edition is offered. I assume that the Apple Watch Edition will not be in most Apple stores. I don't have any evidence of this, but my guess is that it won't be in most Apple stores, but it will certainly be in these dedicated Apple Watch stores. And if these dedicated Apple Watch stores are a big enough deal, we might end up getting more of them.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. When Apple finds something that works well, they exploit it. So if they find that these mini stores just for Apple Watch work well, expect to see those popping up other places.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah,
I hadn't thought about Apple Watch Edition not being in every single Apple store. That's kind of an interesting idea.
Both from a realistic standpoint of selling them basis and from a space basis. I don't think you need... I mean, Apple said it, they're going to be available in limited quantity.
That's true.
So why would you put them in every store? I don't think they will. It doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, so now I guess we wait and see which markets, assuming you're right, qualify for Apple Watch Edition.
Right. That is what we do. Now, do you know what does make sense to me?
Getting smart?
Yes. Yes.
I had a feeling.
It's more than a feeling. It's, which is a song by my favorite band, Boston. Lynda.com. Lynda.com/ACM. Lynda.com is sponsoring us.
Now, how do you spell that?
It's LYNDA.com/ACM. Now, why do you want to go to /ACM?
Because that lets Lynda know that we have the most awesome listeners in the world.
It's an even better reason. That's a good one. There's an even better reason.
So that you get 10 days for free?
Yes. If you go to lynda.com/ACM, you're going to get 10 days of free access to everything they do. And what these guys do, what these folks do, what these men and women do, is they make training videos on all kinds of things.
They have Microsoft over 3,000 right now.
There's 3,000 videos up there. It's crazy. Microsoft Office, all of Adobe stuff, Photoshop, Premiere, Dreamweaver, Illustrator, although I think you have to speak Jamaican to take that one because Illustrator is voodoo.
Well,
there's so many things wrong with me saying that.
Laughing, yeah.
Apple's iWork suite, OS X, iOS, all of the things they have all of these training videos, and their sponsorship of us gives you 10 days of free access. You can use that 10 days to go and learn something.
If you have insomnia, that means you have even more hours every day to go
learn.
It's
true. Now, we don't wish insomnia on you by any stretch, but we do. Listen, I mean, this is such a powerful message to me. The fact that you can go and learn something for free, whatever it is that you want to learn. Logic Pro, Pro Tools,
WordPress, GarageBand, Photoshop.
Yeah, WordPress. Yeah.
How about social networking and social media?
Social, one of the things I meant to look up is if they're doing any coding classes.
Oh, yeah.
Good Lord. So you can go learn anything you want, and you can do it for free for 10 days. And this access, I mean, you get access to all of it for 10 days. It's not like, you can take the, Office 2001.
Oh, man.
or
Windows 98, speed.
Home edition. Yeah. You get access to all of it for 10 days, And you can just go and learn something for free. I want you to do that. Okay, listen, I want you to become a subscriber to them. I want you to have such a great experience that you become a subscriber because they're sponsoring us. I mean, that's the commercial aspect of this. That's absolutely true. But what I want you to do is I want you to go and learn something because learning something is just so insanely cool.
It really is. It's empowering.
Yeah. So lynda.com/ACM. You're going to get 10 days of free access. Go learn anything you want.
Yes, please. And then come back and tell us how smart you are.
Yeah. Tell us what you do with it. I want to see some letters. What is it? ACM@macobserver.com? Is that where? That's where we tell people to write to?
Yeah, typically.
All right. Tell us what you learned from lynda.com. I'd love to hear that. I would love to hear that.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I really would. All right. Thank you to Lynda for sponsoring us. We appreciate her support and their corporate support as well.
Yes, indeed. I feel smarter already.
I do. It's not saying a lot, but I do.
Baby steps, Brian.
Thank you. All righty. Now, speaking of baby steps.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes we all take baby steps in coping with things.
Oh, and see, I thought you were going to go with, oh, and so I was out the other day and got to see the baby take his first steps, and it was so beautiful, and here, I have all these photos and these videos. Sit down and watch. But that's not where you're going at all. Man, I totally misread you on that one.
You did, then.
So anyhow, carry on.
We all have to cope with things in our own way. And since the death of Steve Jobs, I think all of us Steve Jobs, I think a lot of us felt like we knew Steve, even if we didn't, and most of us didn't.
Right.
And while we felt like we knew Steve, some people actually did know Steve, and that includes the executives that work for him. God, I think what did I read somewhere? Something about them being brilliantly insane or something to that effect. I mean, like these amazing people, Eddie Q, Tim Cook, Johnny Ive, Jeff Williams, Bob Mansfield, you know, all these people knew Steve. And at the same time, of course, there was a big rush to capitalize on Steve's death.
Which is, it's unfortunate, but it's also how it works. It's not just Steve. It's anyone that's a big name like that.
Yeah. Yes and yes and yes.
For some people, that's part of their coping.
For some people it is, and for some people it's just, you know, an opportunity to make some money, that's for sure. But, you know, Walter Isaacson wrote the book Steve Jobs.
Right, and this is the book about Steve Jobs, where Steve Jobs actually participated.
Yeah, Steve recruited Walter Isaacson to write this book. And he did so, according to Walter Isaacson, because he wanted someone to tell the unvarnished truth about him. He wanted his kids to know who he was.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the things Mr. Isaacson quoted Steve on saying. And you know, Walter Isaacson's background, he was a Times journalist for Time Magazine. A Time journalist.
Okay.
For Time Magazine for a long time. He's done a lot of different things, but he's also done historical biographies. He did one on
Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin, yeah, it's my favorite.
Didn't he do? That's funny. I can't think of anyone else.
Did Einstein?
Oh yeah. Okay. Yes.
He did. I think it's John Quincy Adams or John Adams or maybe both. I forget which. Might have done George Washington. But he hadn't done a biography on anyone like Steve Jobs, anyone that was really modern, Einstein being the closest.
Yeah, and it's funny, a lot of people don't think of Einstein as modern, but they should. But yeah. I digress.
Yeah, fair enough. And the thing I like about Walter Isaacson's writing is that he uncovers the tiniest little details that add context to someone's life. Like when he introduces a person in his biographies, he always gives like one or two facts, like quirky facts about their life, like who always ate pineapples for dinner or something like. I mean, that's I'm making something up there, but he always gives these one or two facts about their about the way they lived or the way they acted or the kind of reputation they had that gives you some sort of like immediate feeling for the context of this person. And you know, the name of the show is The Apple Context Machine. I obsess over context.
And I had no idea.
Yeah, I know you probably hadn't picked up on that, but yeah. I think it's one of the reasons why I like his writing so much. He's not Mr. Isaacson is not the most gifted writer of all time. He's a good writer, but he's not the greatest writer. But he is a great biographer,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. And I think he tends to be extremely fair and open and honest. And I think that the journalist in him makes sure to not overly editorialize the information that he's presenting.
You know, it's funny you say this because I've got the distinct impression that there are some people that feel like all that Walter did was present Steve in a negative light.
Well, I think that was certainly one of the criticisms that I've heard, and I know that you didn't even finish the book, Steve Jobs.
I didn't, but it's not because I felt that Walter was presenting Steve in a light that I didn't like, because ultimately it doesn't matter for me. It's am I getting accurate information? The problem I had was that I felt that he was so hung up on certain little things and he just drug it out for chapters. And I felt like I went through a quarter of the book and all we really got out of that was Steve Jobs cried to manipulate people and he smelled horrible because he wouldn't take a bath.
And that just wasn't my feeling about the book. I mean, yeah, we learned those things.
We did, and we learned them very early on in the book, which is totally fine. And it just felt like that just was the underlying theme through all these sections I was reading. And eventually I lost interest, and not because I was unhappy with the way Steve was being presented.
You were bored.
I was bored, yes. Mm-hmm. I got bored reading the book.
All right, fair enough. I didn't. A lot of our readers don't like the book. I've been criticized for praising it, and which is fine. But
I know a lot of people loved it.
I just thought it was an amazing book. I thought that there were sections that I wished he had spent more time with. I wish he'd spent a lot more time with Next. I wish he'd spent a lot more time with the evolution of Next and also the evolution of Pixar.
Uh-huh.
I was really looking forward to learning more about those parts of Steve Jobs' career. So I wanted more of that stuff, but the stuff that he did include, I was just captivated by. And yeah, there was a lot of negative stuff about Steve's behavior, about things like you know, how he shafted Mr. Kotke out of shares,
mm-hmm.
of Apple in the early days, and a lot of things like that. They were in there, but there was so much awesomeness in there too. There was so much stuff about how Steve inspired and drove people to acts of greatness.
Right, and clearly he did inspire a lot of people.
He really did. And I don't think that you can... I don't think it behooves anyone to whitewash over the negative aspects of Steve Jobs' personality. Because guess what? We all have negative aspects of our personality.
Sure, and for all of us, those negative aspects play as much into who we are as our positive aspects do.
Yeah. for most of us, for sure. For me, I think so, at the very least. And it makes no more sense to whitewash those things than it does to ignore the greatness of someone, the great thing someone actually did. I mean, yep. you it's all part of it. And, you know, and the thing, you mentioned this at the top of this segment, but Walter Isaacson is the man Steve Jobs chose to write his story. And he is the one person that Steve Jobs cooperated with to tell his story.
That's pretty big, because this is truly the only person Steve cooperated with to make a book about his life. And yeah, handpicked,
and gave him unprecedented access. Gave him lots of interviews. Let him be around when some things were going on. Gave him access to.
Invited him into his home.
Invited him into, right. Invited him into Apple. And Steve didn't ask for editorial control over the book. And the reason why he didn't ask for that, because, you know, Steve is known for his control, his desire to control things.
Yes, he is, or was.
Or was, yeah. And he is still known for it.
That's true. He just, as to the best of our knowledge, does not exert that that control.
Yes.
Anymore.
To the best of our knowledge. I don't know if you're trying to be funny, but that's funny.
I was totally trying to be funny. Yes.
So he didn't ask for that control. And it's because he wanted the real story told. And I think that Walter Isaacson did that. Now, did he possibly skew too much towards the negative aspects of Steve's life? Maybe. I have enjoyed his work so much as a biographer, Mr. Isaacson, that my personal bias is to trust what he writes. Now, it's subjective. You can do what you want.
Sure. Yeah, of course it's subjective. Until we have all kinds of concrete proof that he intentionally misleads people, based on what we know so far, it seems reasonable to trust what he's writing.
Yeah. And I tell you, man, the Innovators is even more interesting. The Innovators is it's just a great book, and I think he's super fair and balanced with it. It's a really, really good book. Nonetheless, we have a new book coming out. It's called Becoming Steve Jobs. Actually, it's got a long name. Let me find that full long name, because we're super professional.
Right.
I don't necessarily have it.
By the way, that was an amazing lead-in that we just had. Building up to saying, oh, there's a new book coming out.
Well, because the stuff about the old book matters. It's called The Evolution of a Reckless Upstart. Becoming Steve Jobs, The Evolution of a Reckless Upstart into a Visionary. And it's by, I've got to get these names right, I can never remember them. Oh, sweet, I didn't include the author.
That's fantastic.
In this particular story. I know I got it in the other story. Coming up.
By the one guy and then the other.
Yeah, by the one guy. Brent Schlender.
The one
Rick
guy.
Tetzel.
And the other.
Or Tetzeli. I think it's Tetzeli. I think it's... Is it Tetzel? All right, anyway. Professionals.
Oh, Brian.
So, a lot of Apple's top executives granted interviews to these authors for this book. And one of the reasons, like, here's a quote from Tim Cook that's in the book. I thought the Isaacson book did Jobs a tremendous disservice. It was just a rehash of a bunch of stuff that had already been written and focused on small parts of his personality. You get the feeling that Jobs was a greedy, selfish egomaniac. It didn't capture the person. The person I read about there is somebody I would never have wanted to work with over all this time. Life's too short. And what was the... we've got the comment from Eddie Q.
Mm-hmm.
In the Twitter tweets.
Oh, right. I can't remember exactly what he said, but he basically bagged on Walter Isaacson's book and said, this new book is the first real accurate depiction of who Steve Jobs was.
Yeah, he didn't name Isaacson's book, but what he said, very disappointed in Steve Jobs' Man and the Machine, an inaccurate, mean-spirited view of my friend. It's not a reflection of the Steve I knew. This is a new documentary about Steve, a film.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that the film aired just recently. What was it, at Sundance?
Yeah. And then a few minutes later, he tweeted, best portrayal is about to be released, becoming Steve Jobs. Well done. And first to get it right, which, of course, is obviously implies that
Mr. Isaacson, Walter Isaacson did not.
Yeah. And Johnny Ive has said something negative about Isaacson's book, too. And it seems like, and, you know, in some ways, I feel like these executives all feel like their devotion to Steve Jobs is being challenged by the negative aspects of Steve's personality being discussed.
All right, that's interesting.
I don't know that I don't know these people. I mean, they are all remarkable people. All these people that work for Steve are remarkable people. People that are still there, remarkable people. The things that they have done, remarkable.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I get that they want to be protective of Steve's personality and legacy. I mean, I get that. I respect it. And I'm glad, quite frankly, I'm glad that they're doing it. I actually think that they have all continued to work their rear ends off at Apple without Steve in order to make sure that Steve's legacy is protected. That Apple is a thing that can outlive Steve. I think that they're working to prove that Steve built something that's going to last.
That's some serious dedication right there.
It is. When Steve was sick, I used to worry about the idea that he was the one person that held all these amazing people together.
That was a legitimate concern, because we didn't know what would happen when he was gone. Yeah. And it very well could have turned out that after Steve Jobs died, that the leadership started fighting for control, started trying to do their own thing.
We saw a little bit of that, didn't we?
We did.
Scott Forstall.
But we also saw that Tim was more than willing to do what it took to shut that down.
Yep. And he did, because Tim is an amazing person, too. I find it interesting that they all contributed to interviews. They all wanted to make sure that the good sides of Steve Jobs were also presented in a biography. And I like that, and I get it, and I cannot wait to read this book. But I tell you, their takeaway from reading Walter Isaacson's book is not my takeaway. My takeaway with Isaacson's book is that Steve Jobs was an extraordinary man who used a variety of extraordinary techniques to get people to do things that they did not believe that they could do, at the very least, and in some cases should not have been able to do. And
I like that description.
And there was some ugliness along the way. You know, it's true, but I think that the vast majority of us would have some ugliness exposed if we had someone like Walter Isaacson pouring over our life.
I think that's a pretty safe bet.
Because, you know, I've got a friend of mine who's waxed philosophical about the fact that no one can survive the age of the internet, and that's from the standpoint of your history. That you know, every little thing we do is being preserved somewhere, and that who can stand up to a background check when every little thing that you've ever done or said can be found by someone?
Well, at the least, it means we need to change how we handle background checks.
Yeah, and how we look at that information.
Yes.
There's a lot of people are prevented from getting jobs, based on things that would not have prevented them from getting the job because there wouldn't have been a record of it.
Right.
Which is not to... I'm sorry, we're getting off track a little bit, but I'm not trying to say that, that you know, awful things... that people shouldn't be held accountable for awful things. I don't mean that. But anyway... few people are going to come out looking like nothing but awesomeness and pleasantness and wonderfulness when a good biographer pours over their life.
If you have absolutely nothing that a biographer can find that's bad or potentially awkward or just something that you'd rather not have people know about, if that doesn't come out, then it doesn't mean that those things don't exist. It just means that either you are really, really, really good at hiding it, or they just didn't look hard enough.
Yeah, probably. There are some people that are generally just good.
Yes, but
and that have only done good things.
But there are probably things that that they just don't want shared.
Yeah.
And that's so reasonable.
Yeah, all this is to say, it's pretty interesting to see this reaction. It's pretty interesting to see these executives defending Steve Jobs' personality. I do wonder, like I said, whether or not they feel like their own dedication to him and his, you know, and his vision, whether or not that is somehow challenged by the criticism. I don't think it should be by any stretch. And I also think that it is a good thing for more of Steve's awesome side to come out through these things.
Sure.
It's all good. I can't wait to read Becoming Steve Jobs. I don't even care. I don't care if it contradicts Walter Isaacson's book, even though I'm a big fan of Isaacson as a writer and his work. But, getting more of an understanding of who someone like Steve Jobs was is a good thing.
Absolutely. And even though I didn't make it through Isaacson's book, someday I may go back and finish it, but still, I'm very interested in this new book, and we'll see if this one keeps my interest longer.
Yeah, fair enough. And it may. Yeah, I look forward to finding out. So we're like well over time. Let's close this baby up.
All right. Sometimes it's hard because I just so enjoy hanging out with you and all our listeners.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. All right, that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com, and thanks for listening.
You can follow Jeff over at Instagram at jgamet. You can follow me at Instagram at geektells, GEEKTELLS. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us, and that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
I can't wait to read Walter Isaacson's biography of you.
Oh, good Lord. I can wait for that.